Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are virtual here in Alpharetta. We're not in our normal home inside Renaissance Bank, but we're looking forward to being back there one day soon. In the meantime, though, folks, there's another round of PPP loans. A year ago, no one knew what PPP meant. Now everyone knows what that means. And the folks at Renaissance really do. Because guess what? They have helped clients that weren't even clients before get their PPP loans on the first round. And that's just the kind of bank they are. They're big enough to have pretty much any service your business would need. They're small enough to actually care and actually answer the phone when you call. So try me out on this. Go to renaissancebank.com, find your local office. They've got some 200 across the South open and ready to serve you, and give them a call. And what you'll find is you'll find like a real person as opposed to some computer generated voice with a phone tree. You'll find a real person that answers the phone. So go check them out. I've endorsed them because I know personally the job they do. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Meg Levine and Scott Siegel, and they are with Momentum CPG. Meg, Scott, welcome.
Good morning, John.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, great to have both of you. So the two of you are double teaming me. I'm going to let you, which I love it. I love what you've got going here, and I want to get straight to it. Talk about Momentum CPG and how you're serving folks out there.
Yeah, I'd happy to do that. CPG, first of all, stands for Consumer Packaged Goods. So Momentum CPG is a sales agency consultancy that we've set up to help and work with emerging and high growth consumer packaged goods companies that are simply struggling to scale and grow profitably in what's a really competitive environment. Our team has over 120 years of experience in various major consumer packaged goods companies like Keurig Green Mountain, PepsiCo, Procter & Gamble. And so each of us brings about 30 years experience and all different areas of sales, marketing, sales operations, et cetera. And we really work with the companies that we partner with to create the expansion strategies, new growth, and operational capabilities they need. Anything from strategy, process, partnerships, and sales leadership and development.
Well, we were chatting a little bit before we came on the air. And Meg, I don't know if it's something you said or Scott, but one of you said, you know, we work with companies where they've got maybe a great idea that just happens to be sitting on the shelf, not selling, right? Not going anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, say more about that. What you find is you have really smart people come up with great ideas and they're passionate about it. They go through the marketing, they go through the branding, they go through the pitch to the retailer, and then it might get on the shelf. What we find is they hope, and we know hope is not a strategy, that the consumer will buy it. What we help our clients do is try to figure out how to get that product off the shelf. It could be a promotional strategy. It could be a consumer strategy within that specific retailer. So those are some of the ways that we help, but that's one of the mistakes we find that our clients make is it gets on the shelf and then magically they want it to sell. That's the experience and the breadth of knowledge that we bring to help our clients. Yeah.
I know every client is different and every client has its own circumstances. Every company has its own circumstances, but what's generally the cause of this? I mean, do companies just fall in love with their new idea and expect it to sell, and they really don't, put the elbow grease in the marketing piece of it? Or what are the reasons why this happens?
So one of the reasons and one of the mistakes we find is around price. They might not be priced right on the shelf. They've got to go in and understand what their value prop is. Who is their competition? Are they innovative? Do they have the right package? Think about, John, when you walk down a supermarket aisle and you're looking for something specific. You want that product to jump off the shelf and say, John Ray, buy me. If it doesn't do that, you're not going to stop and buy. So it's really the second phase of understanding all the little things it takes to drive off-shelf placement. It could be a display. It could be a temporary display. So as I mentioned before, that's the value that we bring. We've been there. We've done it. We've seen it. And we know what to go help them do to scale.
Building on what Scott said, I think the other piece is way back at the beginning. You know, they fall in love with grandma's jelly recipe. They think the world needs it. They've created a beautiful label and a great package. But have they really understood what's going on in that category with the consumer? And really taking the time to define who that end user or the purchaser for the household is going to be, and what problems do they have? What are they trying to solve? What health needs do they have? There's hundreds of questions that if you answer, took the time to think about them and answer them up front, it might change your packaging, the ounces in your packaging, your label, the benefits you're calling out. And so I think one of my favorite opportunities when I work with a newer business is finding, you know, those companies that are either really still evolving their packaging and their branding or are flexible. Because often Scott and I recently had a client where we had to introduce a smaller size because the client hadn't thought about, they were asking for a $19 retail price as an opening price point. And in the current year we've been through, that's a high risk for a consumer, right? Who's going to try something, one brand for $19 in case they don't like it?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I would think that your services come in even more to the fore in terms of need. In a pandemic where values, consumer values have changed rapidly.
Yes.
And in some cases, I guess, you know, the proverbial rug has been pulled out from under the feet of some of these companies, right?
Yeah. It's not only the changes, the major shifts in how the consumer is shopping, because they're not walking down the grocery store aisle right now, right? They're maybe seeing a tiny little icon of your product on a web page. But it's also where their shopping has changed. I have a client I took on just before the pandemic, and they had launched into food service. They won a SOFIE Award, which is a really big deal in the natural specialty space. They launched into high dining atmosphere, and then the restaurants all shut down. And they had to literally relaunch and create a grocery brand package, image, and infrastructure logistically. You know, how you ship glass to a grocery store versus doing it through a distributor into a restaurant.
Folks, we're here chatting with Meg Levine and Scott Siegel, and they're two of the four founding partners of Momentum CPG. Let's talk a little bit about the background experiences that the two of you bring to the table here.
So, Meg, would you like to go first?
I can, sure. So my background is 100% consumer packaged goods, born and raised, trained and developed, joined right out of college, joined Procter & Gamble, specifically because they had an excellent reputation in sales training. And then spent my career with P&G, Gillette, Johnson & Johnson, a few of the big blue chip consumer packaged goods companies, and then with AC Nielsen for 3 years so I could really learn market research and category management. And along the lines, all, you know, basically every type of sales journey, every career step, including global marketing when I was at J&J.
Wow. Scott?
So very similar to Meg. I've been doing this a long time, a few years. So I started out with Frito-Lay as the vision of PepsiCo. And I literally started out driving a Frito-Lay route truck. And at the age of 22, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to deliver to stores. And if I think about it, it's probably the best job I had because you really understand how the consumer shops. You get to talk to store owners. You understand inventory. So I spent roughly 18 years there in a variety of sales roles, corporate marketing roles, corporate senior sales roles, and then similar to Meg, moved to smaller and smaller companies. I was with Welch's Grape Juice, with Keurig Green Mountain when it was a startup. So the value that Meg and I bring, we have seen almost everything. We have called on every channel. We have called on every retailer. We understand all the different go-to-market strategies. And we're passionate. We are passionate about consumer packaged goods. We are passionate about helping small and emerging companies scale.
What are the differences, besides the size, of course, that you find in the companies that you've worked for in the past, major companies, and some of the clients you work with now?
Oh, yeah. There's some really obvious ones. The breadth and depth of resources available to them, number one, number two, and number three, probably. And just the experience that you have in a population of people that have grown up at a J&J or a P&G or a Keurig Green Mountain, you've got a lot of people with really good experience to help you when you're either creating or problem solving. And when you're a solopreneur or a small business and you're doing it all on your own, you just don't have that board of directors that you need that might know logistics or packaging or pricing, et cetera. So that's another reason why when we come on board, often we help build that virtual board of directors for our clients. So if they need an outsourced CFO or a marketing expert, a social media expert, we've got that network and we connect them with people that they may choose long-term to work with.
So let's talk about the, I guess maybe the way an engagement works. How about that? You've got a client's got a problem. They've got products sitting on shelves that's not selling. How do you go in and assess that situation? And how does an engagement work?
So typically what we do is we just try to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. We ask a lot of questions. We ask questions about their sales team. We'll ask questions about their strategy. We'll ask questions about their pricing. And then we, based off of that, we can determine what they need. So what we do is we customize our offering to what the client needs. And that's typically how an engagement works, but it really starts with understanding what their true needs are and where they want to go.
And you've got a variety of services. I mean, we've been using the term sales as this umbrella, I guess, term, right, for the services that you provide. But it's dive into that because it's a little more complicated and robust is maybe a better word than just sales.
Yeah, so we really like to think about the services that we offer in four pillars. The first one, because it touches everything, is really sales strategy. So it's what Scott just said. It's meeting the client where they're at currently, understanding their go-to-market strategy, and then through that conversation, analytics, et cetera, helping them really create the most robust sales strategy that they could possibly have, given what their goals and objectives are. The next piece that comes quickly after that is sales process. Because if somebody wants to grow and scale, typically what we find is there's some shortcomings in some of their processes. They may not be documented at all, or they may have done a fantastic job documenting their ordering process and not really thought about the rest of their business process needs or their sales training needs, et cetera, et cetera. So we really go in and do a deep dive if they need us to on sales process, and we will document it. We will train the team on it, and we will leave them a playbook with everything documented. So when they leave, when we leave, they've really got something that they can stand alone with. The third pillar is really people. If they need us to, like I said earlier, we'll assess the team they have, especially the sales team, and then we'll help them fill the gaps. If they don't have the right people at the table, or they don't have enough people at the table, we'll actually go and help them. We have a great partnership with a number of recruiters that are really flexible and very focused on finding the best quality sales people already in jobs, not people, you know, that have been, you know, trying to work from home or something like that, you know, for 10 years. They're really up to date on their sales training. And then finally, and we'll stay and train and train those people. We'll coach those people, whatever is needed, onboard them. And then finally, the partnerships that I mentioned earlier. So if they've got a need because they don't have expertise in something, but they don't want to hire that person full time and put that salary on their P&L, we can find them outsourced resources, sales agencies, BPO agencies that help them create that, fill that need, but not necessarily invest heavily in it. So yeah, that's it.
There's a couple of other pieces. Even, you know, the foundation of everything in consumer packaged goods really starts with supply chain.
Yeah.
So Meg and I have a great partner that we work with. We have a great partner who designs packaging. We have a great partner who designs marketing and sell sheets. So bringing those partnerships, or we're bringing people that we know, people that we trust, and people with experience.
This may seem like a obvious question, but that's never stopped me before of asking obvious questions. What should a potential client of yours look for beyond just a product is not selling? I mean, it would seem to me that there are some signs that of maybe a particular product line they have needs some outside influence or intervention that you can provide. That goes, it goes beyond just, hey, it's not selling, or it's not selling enough.
So there are a couple of things. One is just what is their overall strategy? And what we mean by that in consumer packaged goods, do they want to start in grocery? Do they have an Amazon presence? Do they want to go to club stores? Do they want to go to C stores? And really stepping back and thinking about what we call a go-to-market strategy. Where do you want to go in each one of those pieces? Meg talked about having the right partners and the right sales team. Do you really have the right sales team to call on some of those large national retailers? Are they trained? So you might have a great product, but if your sales team isn't prepared to walk into a large national retailer, there's a lot of things that go on. One of the things that Meg and I talk about all the time are the little things that matter. So an example would be if you're going on a call to a large national retailer, you need to have a pre-call. You need to understand roles and responsibilities. You need to have the right selling material. And most importantly, you need to show up and demonstrate that you were 100% professional and that you're buttoned up.
Some of my favorite calls building on that are when somebody has gotten somewhat successful, as an example, Amazon, where it's very easy to launch a new brand these days on Amazon. And they go on and they're thrilled. They might be making, you know, $25,000 to $50,000 a year, and they're thrilled. Well, what they don't realize is Target, Walmart, Bed Bath & Beyond, they're all looking at those categories on Amazon to look at new items. And that's actually accelerated with COVID, where they're not, you know, there's not as many industry shows, natural specialty shows, shows where you could go, a buyer could go find new products. So Amazon's kind of a showcase now. And the next thing you know, and there's other, you know, sites like that, but the next thing you know, you get a call from Target. You don't have any retail presence. You don't even know how to do it. And Target's asking you to hop on a virtual call with them and talk about potentially, you know, getting a listing at Target. And they just simply don't have that expertise. And that's, you know, one of those calls we might get.
An example of that, too, to piggyback what Meg said, you need a back-end system. You need to figure out how you're going to handle invoices, how you're going to manage your inventory, how you're going to pay you, the retailers. There are so, and I mean so many little nuances, if you're not prepared, mm-hmm. it really could. It could cripple your business. Mm-hmm. And Meg and I have a lot of stories and a lot of scars, and some of us have no more hair, right, because of those.
You've got the collective t-shirt, shall we say, right?
Yeah.
yeah, I'm glad the conversation kind of veered toward a pandemic and dealing with sales in that way, because that's one place I wanted to go and have you talk about engaging a buyer virtually. Yeah. Talk about that issue.
Yeah. I was reading an article over the weekend, and email during the pandemic, email to a buyer increased over 60%. Mm-hmm. Follow-up didn't increase. And so the stats right now are that it takes 5 follow-up, well-written, well-executed, brief emails to a buyer or a potential client before you may get a response. But people were simply kind of throwing it at the wall to see what stuck and then not following up. So you may have followed up 4 times and given up. And it was that 5th time, which only 8% of salespeople do, that 5th time is what gets you the response. And so I think really being diligent, really being crisp and concise, and there it's appropriate to reach out by phone call. Typically, you know, you send them an email, let them know you're going to call them. The other thing that Scott and I train a lot on is how to run a virtual launch meeting via Zoom or, you know, Google, but you've got to be able to be engaging and exciting and showcase your product. We've actually worked with clients to create what we call a meeting in a box. So we'll build a sample kit that not only includes the product that we're launching, but the sales material, you know, the coffee cup, the t-shirt, whatever it is. If that buyer is still going into a headquarter and not working from home, we've made phone calls into their administrative assistant and had them help us decorate the room or warm the sample that we're tasting or, you know, make the coffee that we're sampling that day. So you have to be really creative and think outside the box to try to get that experience as close to in person as you would have been if we weren't all working from home these days.
Mm. Yeah, what we try to do is, in a, as Meg mentioned, creatively be remarkable. That, like all of us, the retail buyers are sitting on Zoom calls all day and they run together. One of the things that Meg and I do with our clients is we make them practice. So yeah. We will literally go through, Meg might play the buyer. Okay, pitch to Meg. The practice gets at all those little kinks that makes that call. in the calls are 30 minutes. You don't really have 30 minutes. You have like 20. Mm-hmm. And you got to get through those 20 minutes. You got to bring energy. You got to be professional. And you got to make sure you manage on time, because the buyer still has control. When 30 minutes are up, he can say meeting over, and you're getting ready to say something, and you don't get a second chance. So the fundamentals of practice are so important.
I think the other thing that Scott said when he said you don't get a second chance is on follow-up. Like, we try to get our clients to anticipate everything that buyer may ask or need coming out of that meeting and have it ready. So if they need package flats, if they need live UPC codes, if they need a price sheet, it better be ready and like in the email, ready to go out. Because like Scott said, they're onto their next third, fourth, fifth call. By the end of the day, they may have completely forgotten what they were waiting on, and it just falls off their desk. So the quickest way to a yes is preparation.
And let's talk about what happens if a buyer won't talk to you.
So that can happen. A great example of that is if your product is off cycle for when they're used to managing it. So you have to put yourself in the buyer's seat and understand what their roles and responsibilities are. And you might be super excited that they buy sparkling water. And what you're not really thinking about is they buy the entire aisle. And so, you know, between all the categories they're managing and all the logistics and all the complexity of supply chain disruption during COVID, you might be trying to get a sparkling water in front of them 4 months before their category review timing, which is when they look, typically it's twice a year, sometimes it's once a year, when they look at the whole category, try to cull any slow movers or losers and make room for the exciting new products that are launching. If you're 4 months ahead of that, he may not be calling you back, right? So there's lots of ways to get that insight. There's sites like RangeMe that you go on and you can build your own sales sheet up there, all the information on your brand. It's an avenue to all the buyers that are looking. So if a buyer has some interest in bringing in new items and it's outside their category review, RangeMe is a great example of a site they'll go look to see what new items are, or Amazon. But it's really understanding what their timing is. And then your first email should really have a hook that really speaks to what the buyer's needs are and what the shopper's needs are, right? Because the buyer is really doing everything he does on behalf of the shoppers in that store, whether it's bricks and mortar or e-commerce. And so you've got to go in speaking their language. They're not that excited about the fact that you've got a hot new club soda with the fourth blackberry flavor they've seen in a week. You have to convince them why that particular item is really smart for them to take.
And it goes back to what Meg talked about earlier. It's about being creative, being remarkable, and practicing. So call up your friends. John, I might call you and work on my pitch. You get one chance. Tell your story. Make your story clear, concise, and compelling. It works, but you've got to be willing to put in the time.
Yeah.
Folks, Meg Levine and Scott Siegel from Momentum CPG have been with us. Meg, Scott, this has been great. And I know that there are probably some folks out there that may have heard something that sparked, something you said that sparked something for them. And, we need to get them to the most important question, which is how do folks get in touch if they'd like to do that?
It's easy. We're at MomentumCPG, one word, no hyphens, .com. And Scott's email address is scott@MomentumCPG.com. And mine is Meg@MomentumCPG.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn. We both have a really strong presence. And Levine is all E's. And Siegel is I-E-G. So get the I's and the E's right, you're all good.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And you don't have to worry about that on that email, right? Just first name. So that works out
that's
great.
Exactly why.
Yeah. Everything we talk about, we try to make it simple and easy and scalable.
Yeah. I love it. Meg Levine and Scott Siegel, folks, from Momentum CPG. It's been great to have both of you.
John, thank you.
Thank you for hosting us.
Absolutely. Folks, if you've got a problem in your business that involves you spending too much time on administrative tasks or accounting or marketing or just some details that really don't belong on the owner's desk, they belong with an angel. I'm talking about an angel from Office Angels. And the chief executive angel at Office Angels is Essie Escobedo. And I work with Essie myself in my business, and I do because she makes me much more productive than I would be otherwise and keeps me from working on a bunch of little details that I have no business working on that I'm not very good at anyway. So what she does is she listens to your problem when you call her at 770-442-9246. Or if you're timid, go to officeangels.us and check her out. But what I suggest is just call her and tell her John Ray suggested you talk to her. And what she'll do is she will listen to your problem and then find the angel that she's got in her heavenly team that will fly in, get the job done, and they'll fly back out. And they'll do it on an ongoing or as needed basis. And by the way, they've been virtual for 20 years, so a pandemic does not scare them. Or change what they do. So they work with folks here in the Atlanta area where they are headquartered, but also around the country. So give Essie a call, 770-442-9246, and you'll be glad you did. Folks, just another quick reminder as we head out here, we are on all the major podcast apps. Yes, all of them. I have yet to be stumped. North Fulton Business Radio is a search term. And if you would find our show on your favorite app and subscribe, we love it. If you would do that, we would be even more honored, actually, if you would give us a 5-star review. And it's not about me. It's not about Business Radio X. It's about our guest and helping folks find the show so they can find great professionals like Meg and Scott and the other almost 600 guests we've had on this show over the last going here on 5 years. So that's what it's all about, is promoting the great work that they do to serve the market out there. So if you could do that, we'd appreciate it. And you can also connect with us on social media. We're at North Fulton BRX on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. So for my guest, Meg Levine and Scott Siegel, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.